Okay, so today we're going to meet Unkelus of the Agadita. Now, before we meet the Unkelus in our Gemara, let us meet the Unkelus of the Gemara in Gittin, where we actually are introduced to his character a little bit. It is never quite clear whether we're actually talking about Unkelus the Metargame or not. It's really unclear. Academics assume kedavar pashut that we are not, but as we'll see, even very classical sources are not sure that that's who we're talking about, for reasons that will become clear in just a moment. But let's just read the Gemara before we do that, okay? And see what we glean from it. Unkelus bar Kalonikis bar achde de Titus have. So Unkelus was the nephew of Titus. Who's Titus?
The emperor.
Titus.
Roman general or something. Yeah.
General become, yes. Who destroyed the Beis HaMikdash.
Yeah.
Him. By Ligure. And then in, this is like classic trope, right? Nephew of the guy who wants to destroy the Beis HaMikdash wants to convert to Judaism.
Right.
Fine. Right? This is the middle of the Korban Gemaras, if you remember, from, those little things that you can actually learn on Tisha B'Av. So, Azal Aiske Lititus Binigida. So he decides, he brings up three consultants from the netherworld to ask their advice. So Titus is dead. So he calls up Titus from the dead through necromancy to ask him whether it's a good idea.
You mean the actual Kishuf?
He's not Jewish. It's fine.
I mean, look, I don't know what this means, but this is the story the Gemara tells. If you believe in magic, then yes, actually. If you don't believe in magic, then presumably this is agadic. It's, no different than Eliezer ben Dordaya, who talks to the sun, moon, and stars, right? This is in his head. I don't know. Okay? However you want to understand it. He says, who is it that is Chashuv up there in Olam Haba? Amarle, Yisrael, the Jews.
Yisrael.
Very close. Oh, if the Jews are so Chashuv, should I cling to them? Amarle, Milayu nefishin velo motzis likiyaminu zil agre buba alma vaviz reisha dechsev havitzare lirosh v'kol amechir l'tzral nasarosh. She says, nish, don't do it. There are too many mitzvos. You'll never be able to keep it. It's not worth your time. You might as well enjoy this world. Be their greatest enemy. And God makes their greatest enemies great. Tosus suggests, because then otherwise it's a bizayon, right? If we were to be challenged by little lowly people, it'd be bizayon. So he's saying, look, you're not going to win anyways. Don't bother converting, right? Now, instead be their enemy, like me, and then you'll be, emperor, right? Now, of course, agadically, this Gemara is wonderful, because let's assume it's not literal for a moment. It is a beautiful agadic description of anti-Semitism, right? Which is, he says, he's dead already. He's in the Olam HaEmes. And he says, the Jews are great here. And then in the Olam HaEmes, he says, should I become Jewish? He said, nah, be their worst enemy, right? Like, you understand? And then he says to him, right, the next line is great. Amalei dine du gavra b'mai. Well, how'd that work out for you, uncle, right? What is your punishment in the world to come for having been their greatest enemy and destroying the Beis HaMikdash? Amalei, says, not so great. Every day, God takes my body, burns it into ashes, scatters my ashes on the seven seas, recollects it, and does it again. Right? So, right, this is like a beautiful agadic description of anti-Semitism. Right? I know I'm wrong. I know they're better. Right? But I hate them. I'm suffering for it, but I suggest you do the same.
Well, he doesn't say because I hate them. He says it's your best bet.
Well, no, it's your best bet, right, is... Well, no. He says it's not worth becoming Jewish because you can't keep the mitzvos. He could have said, become a good, ger toshav, right, which is easy, seven mitzvos. No! Be their greatest enemy and enjoy this world by being a groisa anti-Semite, right? And it'll be great for you in this world, and achanami, you'll suffer for it for all of eternity, right? It's like a beautifully agadic way of describing the depths of anti-Semitism. Okay, it's a beautiful, beautiful. Okay, great. Anyways, So Azal Aiske le Bilam ben Agida. He said, okay, I need a second opinion. So he asked Bilam, Amarle, man chashuv b'alma, who is important in the world to come? Amarle, Yisrael, the Jews. Ma'olid bukebe boosh, so should I convert? Amarle lo tidro shlomam vitovatam kol hayamim. Thou shall not ever seek their goodness, right? Their peace for all of eternity. So Amarle, dine dehu gavra b'mai. How's that working out for you in the world to come? Amarle, b'shichvas zera rosachas. I am boiling in boiling hot semen. Right, as the Mefarshim know, this was the punishment for Bilam for
trying to wipe out the Jews.
Correct, for being the person who gave the advice to have the Jews seduced. Right, he sinned by in sexual sin, and therefore he suffers.
And he has no Olam Haba, according to the Mishnah.
Again, what this Gemara means, I don't know exactly, but fine. So, Azal Aiske Binegida Leposhe Yisrael. So then he called up the generic sinner of Israel. Now, guys, before you even look, who is Poshe Yisrael?
A Menashe.
Anyone.
Not Yosef's Menashe, the King Menashe.
No. You guys know this. Who is Poshe? If you look at a Gemara and it says Poshe Yisrael, what does that tell you? Ding, ding, ding. What is it? It's a changed Girsa. No, it's Jesus. It's Jesus, and it's a censored Gemara. Look at number two. Azal Aiske Leyeshu Benegida. Right? In the proper version of this Gemara, this is Jesus. Right? In censored Gemara, it's generic Jewish sinner. Right? Generic sinner of Jews. No, it is Jesus. Fine. So he calls up Jesus. Amarle, Mam Chashiv Bo Alma. He asks him, who is important in the next world? Amarle, Yisrael. Malid Buke Behu, should I convert? Amarle, Tovasam. Drosh, so Jesus at least gives him good advice, and he says, yes, thou shalt seek out their goodness. Ra'asam lo tidrosh, never seek out their evil. Now this makes sense, right? He is a Jew. He is a Jew who admittedly had a different theology, but he is Jewish. And therefore, by the way, it is fascinating.
Yeah, I thought he did not have a different theology. He just thought he was Jewish.
Well, no one knows what the historical Jesus, but even later on, by the way, the Christians... they said, many of them, right, before there was a really, really deep split, they said, yeah, you have to listen to the Pharisees, right? I mean, Jesus says this, listen to the Pharisees even though they're evil, right? Even though they're hypocrites because they have the Masorah, right? And you find this in early church fathers, that they'll talk about how the Jews have the Masorah, right? They're wrong, right, about not accepting Jesus and things like that, but they have the Masorah. So Jesus is portrayed here as saying, yes, seek out their goodness, not their evil. And anyone who bothers them, it's like poking God's eye. Right? Which is Amarle. So once he's talking to Jesus, Amarle Dina Duhu Gavra Bamai. So how's it going for you in the world to come? Amarle, not so great. But Sora Rosachas, I'm boiling in dung. Nice. Right? Boiling hot dung. Because anyone who makes fun of Chazal gets boiled in dung and tachazim avim poshi yisrael nevi umasa olam over the avodah zarah. And then the Gemara says, see how different the Jewish sinners are from non-Jewish sinners, right? Because the Jewish sinners, despite the fact that they're suffering, right, they still recognize the truth and say, take care of the Jews, right? Meaning, despite it all, as opposed to the non-Jews who their anti-Semitism is so deep that they say, no, right? I know that they're right, but who cares, right? What? So this is a background. Now, again, I don't know exactly what this Agadata means. It's clear that the end line of the Gemara is part of the point, right? Is that this is a, right, assuming you don't want to take this literally, it is a constructed Gemara that's meant to teach you that non-Jewish anti-Semitic Rishayim are fundamentally, right, more spiteful, shame spite than even the worst of the Jewish sinners, right? That's clearly the upshot of that Gemara. Okay? But for our purposes, what we have is, if Ungolus, if we're going to try to understand his personality as presented in the Gemara, is a convert, a truth seeker, right, who is trying to figure out, right, in an objective sense, right, what is the value of Judaism. Now in this one, he is trying to be convinced, which will set us up for our Gemara where he is doing the convincing, right? He is convinced and doing the convincing. Now, are these the same people as the Unkelos we're about to read in Gemara and Avodah Zarah? It's not clear. As Martzchius notes in number 3, Ayin b'seder hadoros, erech Unkelos, shekazu b'shem ma'or einayim, she'ein ze Unkelos ager bal hametargem. He argues that this Unkelos is not Unkelis, who wrote the Targum, even by Chazal standards, right? Not in academic sense. Academics will just say these are all constructed tales, right? But even if you want to accept Chazal's own timeline, the Ramatzinu, because Argamar, which we're about to read, Navot Zar Yud Aleph, Maisa Shemez Rabin Mliel HaZokin, V'Sar V'Longo Zager, Kalev. Right? The context of how Unkelis comes up is the Gemara in Avodah Zarah is talking about the mourning practice of burning kalim of someone who dies so that no one else can use it. And the Gemara says that Unkelis did that for Rabban Gamliel, which means that Unkelis is a contemporary or slightly later than Rabban Gamliel, which would put him at a very different time. Very good. Hare, the Bemises Rabban Gamliel Azokin, Ayo Unkelis Kvar Misnag Bidaz Yudish, which means that by time Rabban Gamliel, right, Hazokin is dying, Unkelis has already converted because he's already respecting Rabban Gamliel. Right? No, it's the other way around. Not Gemara. Rabban Gamliel HaZaken. Right? It's too early. Right? Rabban Gamliel HaZaken is before Korban HaBayis.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But Rabban Gamliel HaZaken kodim har b'letitos tareyav b'no Reb Shimon Gamliel nerek shnei shanim kodim haKorban. Because Reb Shimon ben Gamliel is one of the Asura Heruge Malchus. Right? Which means that Rabban Gamliel HaZaken is significantly before.
Right?
V'haya Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai l'nasi b'zmana katzar hazeh u'bikesh min hakeika shi'achzer shal Rabbi Gamliel le'itana harishon v'chein haya shenasar Rabbi Gamliel diyavo l'nasi kayadua. Right? And he said, if you remember the story of Titus, Rabbi Gamliel's grandson, Rabbi Gamliel Sheni,
killed him.
No, is one of the people who's installed in leadership in Yavne as part of that final request, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Right?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Right? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai goes to Titus, he manages to smuggle out of Yerushalayim, say, you're... Guys, what do you do on Tisha B'Av? What do you people do on Tisha B'Av? Right? On Tisha B'Av, right? We tell the story that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai manages to smuggle out away from the...
He said about the shoes.
Right? All the zealots in Yerushalayim. He gets to Titus, he says, you are going to be emperor when he realizes that he's telling the truth. He said, oh, I give you three wishes, I'm a genie, right? And he says, right, give me a doctor for a tzaddok, right? Tainli, and his most famous line is, Tainli Yavne v'chachameha, right? Tainli Yavne v'chachameha, and he installs Rabban Gamliel, right, the grandson, as in the leadership position in Yavne, the grandson of Rabban Gamliel Hazaken, right? So the Maratchis points out that by Chazal's chronology, right, clearly the Gemara in Gittin is not talking about the Unkelis Hager. Right? I mean, he's talking about Unkelis Hager. It's not talking about Unkelis Hamatargim Hager, right? Assuming that the Gemara in Avodah Zarah is Unkelis Hamatargim. Right? Now, this is why academics will tell you these are all constructed stories. Right? That they're about...
Right? They're all about Unkelis, but they're just...
They're all Mishalim, right? I mean, they're all meant to teach you a lesson. We pick a personality.
You don't have to be an academic to say that.
Correct. But I'm saying... I'm saying... I have no problem with this. I have no... Right? We've talked about this before. I don't... Remember Avraham ben Rambam? Certain things, did they happen? Maybe. Right? The next story, for sure, could have happened. Right? This one, I tend to think is...
Yeah,
probably. A mashal. The one we're going to read from Avodah Zarah, I have no problem saying happened in some way, shape, or form. If it didn't, it also doesn't bother me. Right. Okay? So, El Akarcha's uncle is there, who ger el acher, shin is garbiz mantitos. It was a different ger. Okay? Fine. Uktas chachamim ratzu lomar, the uncle is there, who akilas hager, shin is garbiz man, ulazer yeshua, kin is rabbit chanchuma. Now, it gets complicated, because there actually were two targumim, both written by guys with very close names. One named Unkelis, which is the one we have in Aramaic. There was also a Greek Targum by a person named Akilas, right? Which we actually have. This is not like we're imagining this. There's such a thing called Akilas, right? Yes, Achilles, correct. There you go. It's Achilles. It's a Greek name.
There's no N.
By different Targumim. These are different, right? There is a Greek one called Achilles. Yes, Achilles, correct. Right, that is, you would translate that into English. So he says, maybe one is Unkelis, one is Achilles. And he says, V'chilufim ka'ilu shchichim ma'od ben ha-midrashot. He says, names like that switch all the time. The point is, what's important for us is the story, right? The lesson, whether it happened historically or not, is less important. The first one, I tend to think... is a constructed story to teach a lesson. The next one, I don't know. Okay, but let's move to the one in our Gemara. You can look at our Gemara, but I gave it to you here, number 4. Okay. Shadar Keser Gunda Diramoya Basre. So, you have this very fun story. So, in the meantime, Unkelis, right? You're not supposed to... sorry, I cut off one line. I don't know why. clearly where that end was like something happened, like when I was copying and pastes. If you look at the beginning of the Gemara in Yud Aleph, at the top of Yud Aleph on Aleph, I'll read it to you, but then everything else is here. Uncle is Bar Kalanimos Igayer. He converted. Now we're already at the right place. Okay, that was it. He converted. Bad. Illegal. Don't do such things. Don't convert to Judaism if you are related to the Roman Emperor. Bad idea. Okay? Bad. We're good? Bad idea. Bad idea. Since you're all Jewish, doesn't matter.
Wait, related to the Roman Emperor? I thought he said not the same guy.
What?
I thought he said he's not the same guy.
What?
I thought we said he is.
Okay, whether he's related, doesn't matter. Right? Okay, not... If you're when it's illegal to convert to Judaism, don't do it. Okay? or do it, but you will face consequences. But you're Jewish, so it makes no difference. Okay. So anyways, what happens? Shadar Kesar Gunda Diramoya Basre. The officer, the Caesar is not too happy about this, so he sends a Gunda? Is a gedud. Is a platoon, a military platoon. To punish him, to kill him. So what happens?
What's a platoon?
A platoon? An arm. A group of soldiers. Are you happy? Group of soldiers. Right? Unit of soldiers. Okay? A bunch of people with guns. Bayonets. Whatever they were, right?
Several atoms together.
Whatever. So, what happened? Now, so they said... Oh, no, I did skip a few lines. I did skip a few. So I'll just read from the guard for a minute. Amar lehu lo tamer le velo midi.
Whoa, you're skipping hard.
What?
Where are you now?
So I'm...
Are you in the Gemara?
I'm going to the Gemara because for some reason, like, two lines got cut off here. But you can open the Gemara, but I'll read it to you. It's pretty easy. The top of it, Alphonse. Shadar gunder... Oh, no. This is where we're up to. Right. Mashkinu Bikrai, Igor, what did he do? He taught them some Teire, and they all converted. Right? He sent people to kill him, and they converted. Hadesh Adar Gundar Moyachrina Basre. So he did it again. Amr Lahu, Lotem Ravlomidi. Shh! Don't talk to him. He's a very good missionary for Judaism. Don't talk to him. Kavishakalu Vazi, Azlu. So as they're dragging him out, right? Amr Lahu. So what did he say?
The
mezuzah. So that's where we get there. We'll get there, right? He says, right? We'll get there. So what does he say? Right? Let me say something. Right? Nipuria nakat nura kame pifuraya pifuraya leduchsa duchsa lagmonia agmona lukuma kuma minakat nura mikame inche. Amarle, Hakadosh Baruch Hu Nokat Nura Kame Yisrael. So what does he say? So he says, "Who carries?" I'll give you the short version. Who carries the torch to lead the way? The chashuv person for the little guy, or the little guy for the big guy? Right, and then he gives you this list of different chashuv people. Right, the apufyor. Right, right. Rashi just says, "Kulan min Yisrael hein zelam al mizeh." Okay. Rashi just says, he's telling you, right? General for lieutenant, right? I don't even know the order, right? General's definitely at the top, but general for lieutenant, for private, whatever, I don't know, right? Who carries the torch? Would the little guy ever, so would the big guy ever carry it for the little guy? Does the general ever carry the flame, right? The flashlight for the private?
No.
And the guy says to him,
no.
No. Right, so Amar Lehu, so Ungla says to him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Nokat Nura Kame Yisrael. Ah, by us, God did it. God carried the fire in front of the Jews. D'chsev Hashem Holech Lefnehem Yomam. Because God had the pillar of fire. Look how much He cares about us, the little guys. Igayer Kulhu. They all convert. So Hadar Shadar Gundachirna Basrei. Right? So he sends a third one, and this time he says, Amr Lulu, tshtoy midi b'hadeis. Don't say anything, don't let him say anything. Right? Nothing. Right? Just drag him out, kicking and screaming. Right? Kinak dele. V'azle chazam zutan manka pitzcha osiv yada ale. Right? So as they're dragging him out, he like swings up his hand, I'm over traumatizing, whatever, sees the mezuzah and grabs the mezuzah. And their curiosity overwhelms them.
Oh, yeah.
The Amr Lehu, my eye, What is that? Amrulay Amalanat. Tell me, what is this? Amrulu min hagel shol amelch baser v'dam yoshev mivivnim v'adam v'shamrus v'bechutz v'ilu hakadosh baruch hu avada v'mivnim v'hu mishamr v'bechutz shenemar Hashem yishmar tzeischo v'echa me'atav yad olam. He says, by the human beings, the guards stand outside and the king inside. By us, the king is outside protecting us on the inside. That's the mezuzah. And what happens, predictably? Yep. They all convert. Very good. Right? Very good. Igayer.
What was the first one?
The mezuzah protects.
They convert what?
What's the number of this man?
The first time is he just taught them a little Torah. The second time, he gives them the fire thing. And the third time, he gives them this mashal, Igayer. So they all convert. Velo shadr lehud. Right.
The mezuzah protects us? Is this where they get it from? Yeah, mezuzah protects us.
No. They get it from the pasuk. But yes, this is the classic agadata that's close to that context. That's correct. Vesulo shadar basre. So he gave up. I'm done. I am done. Fine. Good. So let us try to analyze this Gemara. What lessons do we pull out of this Gemara?
Torah keeps us safe.
Good. So first of all, right, clearly, you don't have to be a big genius to figure out that whether this story happened or not, right, whatever Unkelus said is meant to teach us something. So Unkelus says, yes, look how amazing it is that God protects us, right? And God services us, right? Not just protect, takes care of us, right? Maybe you never think about it, but that really is counterintuitive, right? And it's also very not pagan, right? Because the pagans, human beings, are here for God, right? Are here to service God, and we are not. We're here to serve God, but God in return actually services us. He protects us, right? That's counterintuitive, and you should understand how amazing that is, right? That's like, right? Now, obviously, this is also an inspiring mezuzah, you know, story, right? Again, there's certainly got it to the basic levels of message here are extremely straightforward,
yeah.
Right? Extremely straightforward as things go, right? Whether this is Unkelus or not, doesn't matter, right? The basic lessons you get out of this thing, right? And the framing is very nice, because it's not just, oh, mezuzah is important, it's, look, if you would show these basic insights to a non-Jew and show the uniqueness of Jewish theology, it would convince someone that we offer something that they don't. Right, that's the right, by putting it in this dialogue where it convinces someone to convert. Right now, it also indicates, I think, again at a very simple level, it is a minor ode to truth seeking, which fits with the Gemara in Gittin. Because what's it saying? Right, the Caesar. What is the Caesar thinking? Think about it. How does this connect to the first Agadata? The Caesar ostensibly realizes that Unkelus has right truth that manages to convince group after group. And instead of his solution being, hey, maybe there's something there, his solution is, don't talk to him. Right? Which fits thematically with the story that they tell in Gittin. Which is that...
What?
Correct. Right, that part of why people don't like Judaism is not because they think it's false. Sometimes it's because they willfully avoid the truth or don't care about the truth. Right? And that theme, I think, Chazal is clearly telling you in both stories. Right, and conversion stories are perfect places to tell you that tale. Right, and I think that, again, I think that's a very powerful, subtle lesson of the Agadata that is trying to get across, which is, right, often the reason that people don't seek truth is not because they think it's false. It's because they don't want to accept truth. Okay. Personally, I think, and this is my pshat, that if you want to understand this story, at least as it's constructed in the Gemara, again, you know, there are always three possibilities in Agadata. It's totally historically true, it's not at all historically true, or what I think is true of a lot of stories is there's a kernel of historical truth and then there's a certain allow of artistic right license to make it didactic, right? To make it educational. From that perspective, there is a perek in Malachim that I think sheds light on it. And listen to this story, and then I want to put them in conversation for a minute, okay? This is the first parak in Malachim Bet. So after Achav dies, Moab rebels against the Jews. Now Achaziah is the king of Israel, and he gets ill. And he sends his soldiers, and he says, do me a favor, ask Baal Zvuv. Right, which is like a lowly idol, right? Meaning, as Tanakh is presenting it, right? What is Baal Zvuv?
The Elokei Ekron.
What?
Lord of the Flies.
Lord of the Flies. Very good. Lord of the Flies. Correct. Right? Ask the prophets of the Lord of the Flies whether I shall live. Umalach Adonai diber el Eliyahu hatishbi. Koma leikrat malachei melech sharon v'diber aleihem abli en Elohim b'Yisrael atem olchim ledrosh b'Baal Zvuv elei akron. This is like classic Eliyahu. So a Malach comes to Eliyahu and says, cut them off and yell at them. What? We don't have good Nevi'im? You need to go to the Lord of the Flies prophet? You can't ask me, Eliyahu, who represents God, you know? God, like capital G God, not Lord of the Flies, lowercase G God, right? V'lachein, komar Adonai. And tell him, by the way, because you asked Baal Zvuv, the answer to your question is, you are going to die. If you had asked me, maybe the answer would be different. But because you asked the Lord of the Flies, I will tell you the answer is, you are going to die. Okay, this is very Eliyahu. This is like the type of mission Eliyahu goes on all the time. He's a very, very, right, him and, you know, he's up there with Amos in terms of Harifas, okay? So the Malachim turned back to Achaziah and he says, how'd you get here so fast? Right? How'd you get back from the Lord of the Flies? They said, well, this crazy man came to us and said, tell the king he's going to die because he didn't ask God. Right, how dare you go and ask the Lord of the Flies? Vayedaber aleihem, and Achaziah says to him, Vayedaber aleihem, ma mishpata isha shalal lekratchem, Vayedaber aleihem edvar meila, what exactly did this person look like? Who was it who came to you? Vayom roilav, ishbal se'ar ve'ezor, or azur b'manav, vayomar Eliyah hatishbihu. He said, we don't really know, but he had wild hair, and like a leather pack around his loins. And Achaziah said, oh, that was Eliyahu. Right? I know that person. What?
I am so screwed.
It's like what? Yeah, something like that. Right? He said, oh, crazy hair, leather fanny pack. I know who that is. That can only be one person.
No, it's Yosef Nahon. It's definitely not
Eliyahu. Yeah, right. So, Vaishlach. So now, at this moment, right, what is supposed to happen? Remember, that Achav, in the time of Achav, right, the previous king, Eliyahu had shut down the false prophets in that major moment, you know, at the top of Har HaCarmel, right? And the guy just realized that Eliyahu came and said, what?
You mean we need to know Tanakh?
Yes. Right? Do you know Eliyahu Har HaCarmel?
Yeah.
Really? Really
yeah,
now?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I know.
Okay, good.
No.
You don't know? Oh, God. Okay, very quickly.
Oh, my God.
Okay, very quickly. The Jews, under Achav and his wife, Jezebel, who was really bad, right? Jezebel, right? Really bad, are worshipping all types of foreign gods, and Jezebel kills all of the Nevi'i Hashem. No, they're syncretists, right?
They're worshipping both Baal Peor and Hashem.
That's called syncretism.
Oh, okay.
Correct. But Jezebel kills all the Nevi'i Hashem, except for Eliyahu. Eliyahu says it's... That's it. You guys are going to have a drought for 7 years, right? In the middle, at some point, God makes him call off the drought, but Eliyahu uses that last opportunity and he says, okay, but we're going to do one last showdown. So he comes and he says, right, he shows up to Achav and he says, there's going to be rain, but first, got a test. So he calls the 400 Nevi'i HaBaal up to Har HaCarmel,
classic,
right? And he says, here's the test. We're both going to bring a karban. Right? Let's see, whoever gets fire from heaven, he is real. Right? So he has the 400 Nevi'i Baal try all day. They're screaming to God. Around noon, Eliyahu says, I think your God is sleeping. Why don't you scream louder? They don't get the sarcasm. They start screaming louder. They start cutting themselves, crying, blah, blah, blah. No fire comes from heaven. Shocking. Eliyahu builds a Mizbeach, douses it in water 100 times over, right? Puts a carbonite, and then davens to God, and magic! Fire comes down, consumes the carbon, and consumes all the water. Everyone says, Hashem hu Elokim, Hashem Elokim. Because he yells at them and he says, Ad matay atem poschem al shtei ha-se'ifim? How much longer are you going to be? Posech al shtei ha-se'ifim, right? Is
on the fence.
Wait, on both sides of the fence, correct? How are you going to be syncretists, right? Are you with God or with Baal? They say, we're with God, we're with God, we're with God, yay. And then, after this wonderful moment, the next day, Yizevel says, Eliyahu, get out of here, I'm going to kill you. Okay, fine. And Eliyahu was so annoyed that he goes off to Har Chorev, to Har Sinai, and says to God, Kano kineti l'Hashem elokei tzva'ara. I have done everything for you, and now they want to kill me. What do you want for my life? So God says, you're fired. Right? In Donald Trump style, you're fired. Okay? You're done, Eliyahu, it's over. Go hire a new Nevi. Right? Go hire Elisha. Go hire Hazael to be king over Aram. Go hire Yehu to be king of Yisrael. You're fired. You're done. Okay, anyways, fun times. Meantime, Eliyahu is a super powerful Navi, right? He brought around a seven-year famine, right? He brings this huge miracle. Ahaziah knows what he's up against. So what would you expect at this point? What would he do?
Tshuva.
Oh my God.
Either tshuva or say, oh God, I'm dead. Mm-hmm. Right? Eliyahu said, I'm dead, I'm dead. What does he do instead?
Just go,
yeah. So he sends 50 soldiers to capture Eliyahu, was it up the mountain? And they say, Eliyahu, thus speaketh the king, come down. And what does he say?
No.
He said, if I am really a man of God, let fire come from heaven and consume all of you. And that's what happens. Again, at this point, what should Ahaziah do?
Stop.
Back off. Next pasuk. Vayashav, vayishlach elav sar chamishim acher, vachamishav, vayan David elav yishelohim, ko amar ha-melech mehira reida. He sends another group of soldiers, another platoon. This time the king says, get down quickly. Vayan Eliyah, vayidaber lehem, im ish elohim ani, tered esh min ha-shamayim, vatochal otcha v'chamishecha, vatered esh elohim min ha-shamayim, vatochal oto v'chamishav. He says, if I'm still a man of God, a fire should come down again and eat you all up, and Kachava, right? Fire descends from heaven. Vayashav, he does it again. Vayashav, vayishlach sar chamishim shal yishim v'chamishav vayal vayav sar chamishim shal yishiv v'yichral birkav v'negid eliyo v'chanen elav v'daber elav ish elohim tikarnon nafshi v'nefesh avdecha ele chamishim be'inecha. The third general has a head on his shoulders, and he gets down on his knees, and he says, Eliyo, please have mercy on me. Right? Please have mercy. Look, I saw that you devoured the first groups of 50 with fire. Please don't kill me and my 50 soldiers. So the Malach comes and says, Eliyahu, don't worry, you can go with him. So Eliyahu says, okay. And he gets down and he goes with him. But once he gets there, in classical Yahoo form, right? So now he gives him the message in person, because you were looking for Baal Zvuv and not God, thou shalt die. Etc. So he dies, as Eliyahu predicted. Now, do you see why this story, to me, reminds me of this story, right?
The same three times.
Yeah, the same three times, right? The same three times by the third, but, right, the same time, and each time, right, he fails, and instead of learning the lesson of MS, he just doubles down, right? First time he says, go. The second time he says, quickly, quickly, come down, right? As if that's going to convince Eliyahu not to burn you up the fire of heaven, right? He won't have time to burn us up. Like, what exactly was Ahaziah thinking? But the answer is, what is Ahaziah thinking? It's like Yizevel, right? She saw Eliyahu carry out a miracle, have all the Nevi'im killed, and the next day,
she says,
you killed my Nevi'im, leave, I'm going to kill you, Right? It's like, I don't care how much truth is staring me in the face. Right? I don't care about truth. Right? And I think this story is in conversation, but, and this is, I think, part of something that you find in Chazal a lot, is that there's something that Chazal criticized Eliyahu a lot for being a kanoi, right? Because there's a big difference between the stories, which is, right, in both stories, at the end of the day, God is proven by the end, right?
One of them, you've got 100 dead soldiers.
Correct. In the story of Uncleus, you have? A bunch of Gerim, right? Now, you sort of get that in the third one, right? The third one where he says, look, I recognize the truth. Please don't kill me. And Hashem says, okay, go with him. But what is it showing? What's better, right? What is the best way of winning over these people?
God didn't seem too angry with Eliyahu. He gave him miracles and stuff.
Oh, no, again, within Chazal, right? Is that Chazal in general, right, like to point out that Eliyahu had a particular tactic, but you can accomplish the same as Eliyahu, a shtickle softer, right? Now, Chazal really emphasizes... Now, Chazal pick up on some pretty decent clues that the Tanakh is not so happy with Eliyahu's activity. The biggest proof is he goes to Har Chorev, right? I skipped a little bit of background. He goes to Har Chorev. It takes him 40 days to get there, and he only eats one meal at the beginning of that 40-day journey, and he ends up at Har Chorev. So who does he sound like?
Moshe.
Thank you. Now, when Moshe was up at Har Sinai, and the Jews were involved in Avodah Zarah, what was Moshe up there doing? Trying to defend God, the Jews from God, and protect them. What is Eliyahu up there doing?
Yeah.
I was zealous for you, right? Kill these people who are trying to kill me.
I thought he
wanted that. Yeah, well, that doesn't work. And what does God say to him? And what did God say to him? You're fired, right? You are fired, right? Hire Elisha, who is a less Kanaish Navi than you. He is like the opposite of Elisha, except for the one time that he makes bears come out and kill the people who called him bald. Except for that story, which is the one I still haven't told my children in Malachim, because like Meir gets a lot of nightmares, and if I tell him Elisha once had little kids call him bald, so he had bears eat them. You know, yeah, you know. Yeah, okay, whatever. What?
Two fairy tale esque kind of thing.
But
goodness.
But and Tanakh and Chazal pick up on this. Right, that Tanakh seems to be less than fully in line with Eliyahu's conviction that the best way of convincing people is always with,
yep,
right, with the rod, right, or the fire, or whatever. And I think this story, right, whether it's meant that way or not, right, when contrasted to it, presents two models, just like Chazal do, between Moshe and Eliyahu, which is pretty evident, between Elisha and Eliyahu, is saying, look, the same type of story can happen, the same type of person who's not willing to do truth, right? The king is, right, is the paradigm, the person who's not looking for truth. But the soldiers, right, they are malleable, right? Because they're just doing their job. And there's two ways you can deal with them. You can say, oh, the soldiers are being sent by the non-truth-seeking king, they are as responsible as him. Let me kill them, treat them with the same heavy hand that the king deserves. Or you could try to inspire them to change. Right? And Uncleus, as it were, this story of Uncleus acts as a counterpoint to what Eliyahu does. Right? The same thing. King, not willing to see truth, sends three groups. Right? Each time tries to intensify the pressure. Each time it fails, but by Eliyahu it fails because he kills the first two groups. Uncleus converts the two, and by the third group, right, both of them are at truth, but again,
they weren't converted, they were just bringing
it. They weren't converted, but you do have him recognizing Dvar Hashem, right, but not because of it, right, meaning it does work, right, you can scare the fear of God into people, right, you can do that, right, he manages to do that into the third person, but it took two dead groups, right, two dead platoons, as opposed to Uncleus, who manages to convert all three. Right, and I think at some level, right, this Gemara has to be read, right, in light of a basic working knowledge of Tanakh, because then you see the similarities to the stories, and you realize what they're saying is, right, so to speak, in Tanakh language, Elisha was managed to makariv a lot more people than Eliyahu, right? Eliyahu's conversion end day was fleeting because, remember, this is after Harat Carmel, this is still happening. Because at the end of the day, you scare people, you try to instill the fear of God, right, heavy-handed, how long does it work for? Right? If you can educate them and show them the beauty and really get them to imbibe it, then it will be lasting. And I think at some level that's part of the lesson. Okay, how much time do we have?
5 minutes.
5 minutes. Okay, so quickly, as some of you realize, one of the halachic things which is emerges from this Agadah is that this is obviously the Gemara that people point to as their basis for the notion of touching / kissing the mezuzah when you go in or out of a house, right? This is obviously the Gemara they point to. I gave you a brief summary of that in number 6 from the Daf HaLadaf, just because it was quicker than collecting everything, and I knew we didn't have so much time. But Rabbi Kiv Eger note this, right? Inei Agon Rabbi Kiv Eger, Kosev Lahayr Al-Mashiyesh Anashim Shirigil Nalniyeh Chayar Al-Mezuzah Al-Nashi Yufamim Mezuzah Munachar Shkov Lo Nartik, right? Kosev Utozos, etc. Right? So he gets into the question of, are you allowed to do this if it doesn't have a cover on it? Which is, you know, the halachic problem. You can read that if you're interested in it. But in the second paragraph, he writes, "Umam shekonu givim amar vachmilsa gufa niach yad al mezuzah ein lemakar b'shas." Right, Rabbi Kiv Eger says there is no source in shas for such a thing. However, other people say, right, and if you go all the way to the last line, "Ach mashakazav gonu b'geger," right, leave aside the halachic issue. Shalom matzim akor b'shas and yenachas hayad al mezuzah yesh lahayr digmar akan mevur ledyet the gachnag gonglus ager, right? Many boskim know that's not true.
What could you
right?
say that that's, he did that because he was
okay? It's correct, but the point is, but the poskim who do support it, what do they say? Right now, by the way, the mechaber is the one who right says this, right? That that yesh lahayr hayad. And when the poskim who say you should touch it, if not kiss it, right, but just to touch it, why do they say that?
Reminds you of
God's Shmira. Where do they get the notion that you should touch the mezuzah and think of God's Shmira? From this story.
What?
No, because he put his hand on it, and when they said, "What are you doing?" he said, "This is, I'm putting it on to remind myself that God protects us on the outside," right? That's where they get it from. Again, is it a formal halachic thing? No, but when people say that's where it comes from, now you understand where it comes from, because that is the two elements in the story, putting your hand on it, right? And the recognizing the protection. Just last point from the Haral here in the Chiddush Agadah, which I thought was an interesting point. He suggests that there are two lessons that you get here. One is that God is mishamesh us, right? That's the first half. Right? He said, what's the difference between the two statements? Right, the fire one and the mezuzah one. So he says, the first one is saying God services us, whatever that means, right? But the second one I like is he says, he thinks the import of the second comment is that God isn't just a servant-master relationship where God, despite being the master, acts as a servant. It's a father-son relationship, because he says the notion of someone standing at the outside and protecting everyone inside, that's a very parent-like image. Right, and he suggests that that's really the image that he's getting across. Right, it's not just that God protects us; it's not that he's the guards. Right, it's that he says it's that we're inside and God is outside, which means that we are totally in his rishus. Right, and that's a parental mashal. Right, which is I think a nice way of thinking about it. That what Unglis is really getting at is not just that God protects us. Right, is that God, as it were, right, brings us into his home. Right, by standing guard at the beginning, right, and that is, again, we are his family, we are his children, right, that's the sort of the way you should think theologically of what a mezuzah is, right, God is protecting us because we have accepted to be his banim, and that's the image that is trying to accomplish, which I think is a nice image from the Maharal that's worth thinking about, okay? With that, minchah.